Welcome, all you dazzling children of tomorrow, to another future-shocked episode of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, where the Metahuman Registration Act doesn't apply and the Sentinels haven't been constructed yet. I, Kevin, from the Court of Nerds, will be breaking down the news and reviews from what I deem fit in the nerd world this week. Wouldn't you know, E3 was this past week, and I'm dedicating an entire episode to discussing what I thought was cool, not so cool, and do what every pundit does when it comes to E3. Say who won. But first, a word from this week's sponsor, Bud Light Beer.
Hey Dave, the day's over.
Time for Bud Light.
I can't. I have to cut the cheese.
I thought you cut the cheese already.
It wasn't me.
I heard you cut the cheese this morning.
I like to cut the cheese in spurts throughout the day.
You should cut the cheese first thing in the morning like me. Otherwise, it starts backing up.
I couldn't. My girlfriend was here this morning, and you know how that goes.
I cut the cheese in front of my girl once. I never heard the end of it.
You ever see a woman cut the cheese?
Nah, they don't do it right. They're too delicate.
My grandmother cut the cheese all the time. Especially as she got older.
Hey guys, I'm gonna be in the back. I'm gonna pinch a loaf.
Want me to pull your finger?
Will you pulling my finger help me cut the cheese?
Oh yeah. If I pull your finger, you'll be cutting the cheese within seconds.
Oh, yeah. I have to run. Gotta drop the kids off at the pool.
And now, the news! This will be one giant long rambling news segment. News. I have watched, compiled, and drooled over much as what had been shown at the LA Convention Center this past week, and I must say that this was one of the better E3s for the Big Three console manufacturers since 2009. The last time I was there in person. Shit, that was almost a decade ago. But not necessarily the best for the biggest publishers and developers. What do I mean by that? Well, I'm going to explain it if you give me a damn second. I'll break it down like this. I'll talk about Microsoft, Sony's, and Nintendo's keynotes. Then I'll move on to Bethesda, Ubisoft, and EA. Then I'll check down some new IPs and indie games that made my radar. I'll conclude by saying who I think, quote, won, end quote, E3, and who I think, quote, lost, end quote. Ready? Okay. Let's start with Microsoft. Okay, actually, let me get this out of the way first. I'm going to try to be as fair and even-handed in this as I can. The concept of the console war has fanboys on every side of the spectrum, and nobody likes feeling like they are being dogged by unfair partisan hacks. This is mainly between Sony fans and Microsoft fans, because nobody really feels Nintendo is a contender for the core gamer. Which is wrong, by the way. The PC Master Race is by far the greatest of the trolls, whether Microsoft wants to acknowledge it or not, but Sony fanboyism has made up quite a bit of ground over the years. But the landscape of console gaming is changing in fundamental ways, and that might make those arguments null and void. Okay, back to Microsoft.
They killed the power around the world. We're gonna light it back up because this is far from over. In fact, it's only just begun. That's why we brought in you. You got the talent. Now you need the tech.
Think things too far!
Today, you throw grenades.
Boom!
Tomorrow, you'll be throwing cars.
Ah!
Forget dropping bombs. You're dropping buildings. Now it's time to get to work. Time to step up your...
Much like Terry Crews' spokesmanning for Crackdown 3, Microsoft is very much focused on power. Project Scorpio is now called Xbox One X. I know, Project Scorpio sounded so much cooler. But think of X as in the Roman numeral 10, like Windows 10, and you're beginning to see the picture of what Microsoft wants out of their gaming ecosystem. I've talked about the hardware enough on previous episodes, so I will simply say this. It's powerful. Much more powerful than anything on the market, and will be so for quite a while. 2 years? Maybe three, but I'm betting two. It plays all Xbox One games, hundreds of Xbox 360 games, and even will be adding Xbox games, Yay, I get to play Sid Meier's Pirates on Xbox again. It will have cross-platform play with Windows 10, and you can buy your game once and play it on both your PC and Xbox One X. It will improve graphics, and not just 4K screens, but also 1080p screens for those who aren't bleeding edge. It will be $499.99 for 1TB system in November. Now, those who have been tacking the Xbox One X have focused on price point. I've seen no limit to Sony fanboys ripping on the console that will cost twice as much as the PS4 Pro for not twice the power. I saw this same argument so much in frequency that it seems Sony was writing bullet points for their allies to regurgitate on message boards. First off, they need to remember that the PlayStation 3 launched in 2006 at $500 and $600 for a system that was only marginally better than the Xbox 360, yet cost twice as much. But secondly, they fail to realize that Microsoft really isn't coming for them. They are trying to build something different. Games as a service. Xbox Live has morphed so much over the years and has truly become something that can be accessed anywhere and anytime, as long as it's always on and connected to the internet. As part of Microsoft's Internet of Things identity that's driving their vision of the future, Microsoft would rather have you paying monthly or annual gaming fees to access a huge library of content. Think of it like Hulu or Netflix that allows you to access a movie or show you want anytime, anywhere, instead of buying the media outright and, quote, owning it. You kind of rent it. Game Pass will let you play the hottest games so much for a period of time. You can save your own game files, and they're yours, but not the game. You can always come back and buy the game later if you want to own it in perpetuity, but that's kind of the service Microsoft is building, which is something very different from what Sony is doing. Speaking of which...
all units, 1010 Asset 36 in Park. Repeat, all units be advised. Shots fired at Fisk Towers.
Yuri, I'm here.
What do you see?
Find the rest. The boss wants them dead.
Looks like the demons are moving in on Fisk's territory.
You got this?
I got this.
If Microsoft was focused on making their gaming console turn into an entertainment portal, then Sony was interested in making their gaming console make great games. Not just great games, great narrative-driven single-player games. Insomniac Games, makers of Ratchet & Clank, Spyro Resistance, and Sunset Overdrive, are making a Spider-Man game, and holy hell, what a game. It looks amazing. They just didn't pay attention to little details in the graphics department and in the playability department, but in the comic book character department. They nail Peter Parker as much as they do Spider-Man. A fight on top of a high-rise has the problem of bad guys maybe falling off to their death. Spider-Man doesn't kill, so he has to save everyone, even a guy that he just punched 30 feet off of a building. It has its stealth moments, it has cinematic moments, and it has mind-blowing set pieces. Finally, we don't just dust off the Dreamcast to play a good Spider-Man game. And a new God of War game! Holy shit, Kratos is a dad, and he's going to be fighting Nordic monsters and gods! It's going to pull at your heartstrings while you are deep into what looks like a Shadow of the Middle-Earth style combat system. No quick time events, too. I'm so happy about that, because by the fifth entry on the PSP, I was getting a bit tired of it. Hidden Agenda is another Sony exclusive developed by Supermassive Games. Until Dawn was a fantastic horror game with a flexible narrative that they released in the past, and Supermassive seems content to make another one in that vein, following Until Dawn's blend of cinematic and interactive storytelling, but with a new twist. Multiplayer has been thrown in. Using a system similar to the mobile phone multiplayer design of Jackbox Party Pack, players will be able to vote on decisions that characters make on Hidden Agenda. Considering that choices have a dramatic effect on how the story plays out, this is bound to cause chaotic confusion and heartbreak. Absent was a robust smorgasbord of first-party VR titles. Now, there were some shown, but I'll get to that later in the segment. What Sony seems to be saying with its giant AAA titles is that we are the home for the core gamers now. So does that mean the casual gamer is still in Nintendo's camp?
Come on! Yoo-hoo-hoo!
Here we go, off the rails. But you know, it's time to raise our sails. It's freedom like you never knew. Any bags or a pass, say the word, I'll be there in a flash. You could say my hat is off to you.
What you are listening to is the trailer for Super Mario Odyssey. What can only be described as a hat-based style of play that is reminiscent of Kid Chameleon from the Sega Genesis.
Google that deep cut.
If Microsoft is known for lacking first-party titles, Nintendo is known primarily by their first-party titles. Nintendo opted for a much shorter showcase than everyone else, only 25 minutes long, but packed it nicely with delicious mix of upcoming short-term releases, long-term releases, and reveals of both Kirby and Yoshi. Perhaps the biggest get-hyped moments for Nintendo were games that were simply mentioned, that being the new core Pokemon RPG title for the Nintendo Switch, as well as Metroid Prime 4 for the Nintendo Switch. Nintendo showcased pure content with some crowd-pleasing moments. Even their DLC announcement was impressive. Opting for just 25 minutes, Nintendo fans were worried that Nintendo did not have much to show. And while they didn't, they were still kinda wrong. We didn't see as many titles flaunted as Microsoft or Sony, but we did see really, really, really good games. And things to get excited about, like Mario and Rabbids Kingdom, bringing Ubisoft's insane bunnies to the Mushroom Kingdom. But are there other companies other than Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo? What about Bethesda, Ubisoft, and EA? What did they bring to the show? Electronic Arts games are usually quite mainstream, and their press conference was quite indicative of that. Of course, EA showcased Madden's new long-shot career mode, FIFA 18, NBA Live 18, Need for Speed Payback, and some Battlefield 1 DLC, and Battlefield 2. Perhaps the most interesting part of EA's conference was the tease of BioWare's Anthem, which they chose to completely unveil at Microsoft's presentation instead. A Way Out also showed EA's openness to innovation, showcasing a game that can only be played in multiplayer. EA closed their presentation with a longer look at Battlefield 2 gameplay. This part of the presentation dragged on, and EA might have been wise to have shown some of their single-player gameplay instead. Overall, EA's presentation was average at best, with a healthy mix of interesting games and game footage that felt more like a formality. Bethesda's EA presentation began with a memorial montage that celebrates their employees while simultaneously dropping hints on what games were being developed. Those little dick teases. When one thinks of Bethesda, usually two franchises come to mind first: Fallout and Elder Scrolls. A decent portion of the presentation involved these two franchises, from Fallout 4 VR to the mod community for the games, to Elder Scrolls 5 Skyrim coming to the Nintendo Switch and Skyrim VR. Can I stop right here for a second? Turning successful first-person games into VR ports doesn't often translate well. And that has been the consensus from the E3 floor. A good VR has to be developed from the ground up as a VR game with intuitive controls. And the PlayStation 4 VR doesn't really have the power to give a lag-free experience, which is super distracting in a VR setting. But beyond that. While these announcements were not very exciting overall, Bethesda saved the best for last. Due to speculation and ultimately leaks, much of the surprise elements were taken away from Bethesda. Fortunately, The Evil Within 2, Dishonored Death of the Outsider, and especially Wolfenstein 2 The New Colossus were enough to save the show from mediocrity. Unlike Bethesda, Ubisoft had a very strong presentation from start to finish, featuring titles that could cater to a wide range of gamers. Ubisoft started with the worst-kept secret in the industry, officially allowing Mario and Rabbids Kingdom battle with the Legend's Shigeru Miyamoto himself joining Guillemot to make the announcement. From there, it was Ubisoft's title after Ubisoft title. Assassin's Creed Origins, Far Cry 5, which I'm going to love, The Crew 2, and Steep DLC. While Ubisoft has announced Skull and Bones, it was not the pirate game that most fans were hoping for after Black Flag, but rather a game that focused on multiplayer naval combat. Lastly, Ubisoft ended the show with a bang, re-revealing Beyond Good and Evil 2 with a spectacular trailer. Ubisoft did a great job of balancing the presentation with gameplay while simultaneously avoiding being boring. Ubisoft usually had the best third-party conference, but it would be enough to top the E3 2017? Not if a few of these lesser-known titles had anything to say about it. During the Xbone X reveal, Microsoft showed a title that paired my favorite fighting game publishing studio with the world's most well-known manga. Arc Systems, which is known for Guilty Gear and Blaze Blue, is producing the newest Dragon Ball game, Dragon Ball FighterZ, with a Z. Get it? It is a welcome relative departure from the disappointing Dragon Ball Xenoverse series, which had clunky 3D fighting mixed with a weird MMO kind of gameplay that never lived up to its relatively low bar. It was harder than it needed to be, and it was downright ugly at times. This, however, is a 2D fighting perfected game as only Arc Systems can deliver. The visuals are over the top, the fight mechanics are tightly honed, and the story? Well, it goes well beyond even the Dragon Ball Super has given us so far. Looking forward to Super Saiyan God Broly fighting Gold Frieza. Now, after all of that, it's really hard for someone like me to pick a winner. I strive to be objective. After E3, many people were questioning Microsoft for asking who their new system is for. That's really a good question. The answer is people like me. Most people that have an Xbox One S doesn't really need it. Most people don't really care about 4K gaming because they don't have the TV. Hell, HDMI 2.1 won't even come out till the end of the summer. It's people like me that have bought into their ecosystem and OS that will benefit the most. That is a small segment of the gaming population, but one that Microsoft is banking on growing. However, Sony's games had me the most excited, but these are games that we have known about, for most of which were shown over a year ago at last year's E3, and some won't even launch this year. If you don't have a PS4, Spider-Man and God of War may well change your mind. Hell, it might even want you to upgrade to a PlayStation 4 Pro from a PlayStation 4. I, even being a Microsoft homer that I am, pick them over Microsoft. But it's Nintendo that has ultimately won me over. I, like many, have been very skeptical of Nintendo and their Switch, despite the obscene hardware numbers they seem to be turning out. It's the Wii all over again, except they have learned from their mistakes and aren't allowing bucket loads of shovelware on the system. At least not yet, they're not. It's still early in the system's life, but they have hit a bunch of key points in their lineup and has me excited about Nintendo again, even if my tablet is 4 times more powerful than the Switch. So there you have it. Sludge just picked an E3 winner, and it was Nintendo. Who the hell would ever thought that? Thanks for listening to my little E3 roundup this week, and stop by next week for my regularly scheduled broadcast. I'm Kevin from the Court of Nerd saying, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the precipitate. Bye.